You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Richard Coffin and Jamie Spence.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Gary Woodland wins at Pebble Beach to claim a first major title, denying Brooks Koepka a third consecutive US Open victory.
You know, obviously what he's done the last couple of years is phenomenal. All day he was knocking on the door, so I'm just proud of myself to stay in my moment and control myself and not get too worried about what he was doing.
Analysis and reaction to come on the US Open as we hear more from Gary Woodland as well as from Brooks Koepka and Justin Rose, and then look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the BMW International Open in Germany. Hello everyone, I'm Richard Coffman alongside European Tour winner Jamie Spence, journalist Matt Cooper. How are we all doing? A little bleary-eyed maybe?
A little groggy after a night in front of the telly, falling asleep quite frequently and then being woken up when there's excitement.
11:30 for me, Richard.
That's it?
That's how long I lasted.
So you saw about four holes?
No, so yeah, but I watched quite a bit up to that point. But you sort of think, I'll just watch one more hole. But it got to, I just so tired I went about. I've caught up with it this morning, so not a surprise, our winner, I have to say.
Yeah, I had a bat mitzvah last night, so I was in Manchester as well. So I drove down and I listened to it on the radio.
They didn't have the golf on.
But the bat mitzvah, no big screen. Funny, although apparently the bat mitzvah girl did a speech where her and her friend said they all hang out at the driving range. I've never heard that in one of those speeches before.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the US Open. So Gary Woodland is our champion. You're saying you're not surprised by the winner?
No, not surprised at all. He's a bit like Brooks Koepka for me. He's strong, hits the ball a long way, and I think the reason why you're seeing a better performance because he's improved his short game. It's as simple as that. He was always a player who I was never comfortable when he had a putt, especially the short putts. But he held a lot of good putts over the 4 days at Pebble Beach, and I think he's turned a corner with his game because he was always an impressive ball striker, but really didn't get the best out of his game for me. But he's learned how to do that in a big way.
Jamie, have you played the US Open before?
I haven't, no. It's one of the tournaments I'd love to have played in, actually. I tried to qualify. Well, the qualifying wasn't there for us, actually, back in our day. It's only a recent thing, this qualifying at Walden Heath. I did play in that a couple of times, and I just missed out going to Pebble, actually, in 2000.
Yeah, because first thing I want to talk about, and obviously we're going to get it into this final round, the setup itself. Did it feel like, Matt, to you, a typical US Open?
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think they would have expected there was going to be more wind. And so, therefore, we didn't quite see the test that they set it up as, because they thought more people were going to get into trouble if there was wind. So I quite liked the way it was. I thought it wasn't as ridiculously penal as it's been in the past.
Yeah, see, I like it when it's horrible. I really do. I think they had to be cautious because being by the coast, the wind could absolutely hammer them. And I think USGA have had so much controversy, especially from the players. They had to be careful with this one. It was a really good setup, actually, the way it was with the small greens. The rough was thick, wasn't it? But because the wind didn't blow, we didn't see any high scores, really.
Yeah, Gary Woodland won at 13 under. I mean, that's one shot better than when Tiger Woods won in 2000, and Tiger won by 15 that year. When McDowell won, I think he was over par as well. So it's...
Yeah, but when Tiger was 12 under, no one else was under par.
No, three over was second place.
Yeah, three over was second place. So I'm just looking through the notes here. How many 31 players were under par.
Yeah.
So that the USJ will not like that. They will get their own back next time.
Yeah, was it Wingfoot next year, isn't it?
Yeah, the amazing thing with them is they're like a car that's hit some dodgy ice and just oversteering every year at the moment, aren't they? They're just like veering between what they're doing.
I like that. It's
desperately.
Good.
Yeah, but what they're trying to, they can't quite decide. They had that period where it was big hitters were doing very well. Everybody remembers the years when Jim Furyk did great, but then he had like a lot of big hitters who were just getting the ball as close to the green as possible, thinking to themselves, if I can hack a pitching wedge out, it's better than being a 6-iron and in the fairway.
Yeah, Chambers Bay and Erin Hills.
Yeah.
Prime examples of that.
And then the odd one last year that no one quite understands.
But I enjoyed watching that. I know if I was playing, I'd have pulled what hair I got left out. But didn't you find that fascinating?
Well, it's
last
Saturday.
Shinnecock.
Yeah, it's an identity, isn't it, for the US Open?
They want it the toughest test.
This is going
to. And that's a real fine line to walk.
It's going to really scramble your brains, isn't it?
It will do, and that's what they want to do. They want to find the toughest man that week. But it's a fine line.
But Gary Woodland, as I said, he slept with the lead twice, didn't he? Not just once, Matt.
Not only that, but he continues a trend of major championship winners in recent years, in that he had experience of sleeping on a major championship lead recently. So last August, he was first after 36 holes at the PGA Championship. He ultimately finished sixth. And that experience really matters come next time you're in contention. I did an article recently where I talked about this as being like base camping. So you know how like when someone goes up the Himalayas, they don't just go to the top of the Himalayas straight away. They go to a base camp, they go and test the air, find out whether they're up to it, go back down, go back up. And that sort of experience really helps that you feel comfort levels when the tension's at its greatest. And he's like a prime example of that.
Like doing a mini marathon before you run the full 23 miles.
Yes.
26. Shows you how many times I've run a marathon. I've only eaten a marathon. That's about it. Snickers now. And any other chocolate bar will do as well. Woodland had a one-shot lead over Justin Rose going into the final round, but it was Brooks Koepka who became Woodland's nearest challenger as he chased incredibly fifth major in his last nine starts. Koepka signed for a 68, the first player in the US Open history to record five consecutive rounds in the 60s. Woodland showing nerves of steel in a 68 of his own that gave him, what we mentioned before, 13 under par total and a three-shot win. Just before we get into the nitty-gritty of some of the players and some of the stories, guys, I mean, just on Gary Woodland and his shot-making, it was pretty tense. As we mentioned there, Brooks Koepka on his tail pretty much the whole way through after birdieing four of the first five holes. But we just watched it back just now, Jamie, before we broadcast. That shot at 17 on the green that he hit.
Yeah, that was impressive. Plus the second shot with the wood at the par 5, 14th as well, set up a birdie there just when he was under pressure. Two shots is nothing in any golf tournament, but especially in a US Open. So you're right. But his demeanour the whole weekend, Gary Woodland, was one of not panicking. He went into Brooks Koepka mode. He's just, nothing's going to faze me. No one's going to get to me. I think it helped playing with Justin as well, because Justin's a very calm, calculated sort of player. I think had he been up against Koepka, that would have been interesting. Mm. I mean, Koepka came out birdie four of the first five holes. Had he been playing with him, that just might have made him press a bit, but he birdied two of his first four holes himself, Gary Woodland. So, yeah, very, very impressive all-round performance, especially up top in the head, because as you said, leading any event, I can testify, and I've not been in front in a major, it's very, very hard, and the thoughts going around your head, it's tough.
Well, Matt mentioned he'd led at the USPGA last year. I think he'd been leading going into the final round six or seven times before a PGA Tour event and not won any of them.
That's not quite true. I think a lot of people are missing the Reno Tahoe Open, which he won, because it was a Stableford-style scoring.
Yes.
And he actually was leading that one. I think a lot of people have overlooked this one.
Because it's Stableford. Of the database.
Yeah. But so he had one, but like he had seven experiences of not converting.
Yeah.
But he actually said he was mentally in as good a place as he's ever been throughout this week. And there was a great little text he got from Pete Cowan, who sent him a text saying, "Every man dies, but not every man lives, and you live for this moment." And he said that really got him in the right.
That sounds like Jose Maria Lathabel's quote at Medina as well. He used that similar quote. He's definitely improved himself mentally, and he's improved his short game. That's given him the confidence to do this.
He actually said also that quality chip on 17, he'd actually hit that earlier in the week, and the very shot he played, he previously didn't have in his armoury, but Pete kind of teached him how to hit that shot. So it all came together very neatly on 17.
Saw Pat to redo that earlier in the day as well. It's a shot that quite a lot of players would have practiced for that green, being that sort of figure of eight green.
So you brought up Patrick Reed in chipping.
Yeah.
That was another moment, wasn't it? I mean, that was a beautiful snap.
Don't do that.
No.
Anybody. Unless you're really, you've got to be really angry, Rich, to do that, to snap it over your knee.
But he did.
Otherwise it hurts.
He
trust
did it
me.
So coolly and nonchalantly though, didn't he?
Yeah. Have you ever broken a club on the course, Jamie? How many?
Quite a few. Yes, two in one hole, actually. That was my record. But yeah, it's not clever, is it, really? We're lucky as pros, we can get them repaired very quickly.
Does it hurt your knee?
Oh, mate, that really hurts. You've got to be really in the moment to do that. If there's any back out, you're going to really hurt yourself. Do not do it.
Because it's his brother-in-law caddying for him, isn't it? And he just kind of went, here's the next wedge.
He tossed them the leftovers in the rough as well, I think. I mean, assuming he knew his caddy was going to pick him up.
Yeah.
But just nonchalantly.
I've left a few in bins on the course, actually, probably quite a number that I just didn't want to see anymore. That's the reason why you sort of do it. Well, I did it.
Okay, from Reid back to the winner, Gary Woodland didn't snap any. One of my favourite stats about this guy is in his first 27 majors, not a single top 10. So to go from that, as you say, leading last year at the USPGA, Matt, to now winning one.
And also eighth at this year's PGA Championship. So he's now had three top 10s in four starts in the majors. That's like a big transformation. And it's interesting, he also said that his warm-up routine, right from when he turned pro until the end of last July, hadn't changed. And then he and Pete Cowan just decided that they would change the way he warmed up. And it's literally since then he's had those three top 10s. So whatever the secret was that he's changed, that he's not going to be changing that very quickly.
Yeah, there's a fact here. It's Pete Cowan, isn't it, coming in to work with Gary Woodland and just change his thought process, change his routines, just wake him up a bit as well, because there's obviously a lot of talent there, as I said, with his ball striking, and give him some shots around the green, which he didn't have before. So imagine the confidence that gives you if you're hitting the ball 330 yards down the middle as well.
Yeah, I have delved a little bit into this. They started working together late last year, but it wasn't just Cowan that started working. He also started working with Phil Kenyon, someone else you probably know, Jamie, yep, pretty well. So on the putter, because he was pretty robotic with the putter, and he's basically got him to free up. He admits himself, Woodland, that was the weak part of his game, as you mentioned, ball striking. I mean, he can put it out there with the best of them.
Well, yeah, and it's not necessarily a technical thing. He looks far more relaxed on the greens. It looks like he knows what he's doing on the greens. That's obviously what Phil's given him. His stroke does look at it looks fairly. It would look fairly similar, but he looks like he knows what he's doing. The putter's working beautifully now up and down the line. The face is working square down the line as well. He looks like he's going to hold a lot of putts now. Whereas before, if it went in, it was a shock, to be perfectly honest.
He's also took a lot of inspiration from Francesco Molinari winning the Open last year. There were a few quotes from him shortly after that about how he'd spent a lot of time watching Molinari practice, always known he was a good player, but had been very aware that Molinari had gone from sort of fourth gear to fifth gear and was very interested in what Molinari had done to achieve that. And that's part of why he went to Pete Cowan, went to Phil Kenyon, because he just wanted to get himself at the next level. And so he'd clearly observed that it is possible to do that. He was also quite interested in that he spoke quite a lot about, like, he did a lot of breathing exercises around the... It's the sort of in thing at the moment, isn't it? What, Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods chewing gum to get breath into. Woodland, he wasn't chewing gum, but he was definitely talking about his breathing being controlled through that final round.
Yeah, I mean, because Jamie, you've been there trying to win a golf tournament, led from the front as well when you've won your events too. Do you feel the heart rate changing and the breathing changing?
You have to control yourself, because obviously adrenaline can work against you, especially in pressure mode. Especially when you're on the green, actually, you have to use your breathing exercise. This is nothing new. This has been going on since time immemorial. I work with a hypnotherapist, actually. And I also work with a martial artist. We work a lot on the breathing. It's huge to put yourself into that focus zone. People talk about, you know, you're in the zone. Well, what is the zone? How do you get there? And you do it through your breathing, because it just calms you down. Because when you're racing, your thoughts are racing away with you, your blood's pumping, the adrenaline's flowing. That's what you've got to control, especially at this level. And that's what he did. And that's why he's using his breathing to calm himself down.
And the martial artist, I assume, helped you with the club snapping as well.
No, he didn't help me with that. But,
that came naturally.
He helped me recover.
I thought Woodland's course form was quite interesting as well, because he's not one of those people who immediately sprung to mind as having a good pebble beach record. I think he'd missed three or four cuts there, but the one time he did make the cut, he finished fifth. This is in the AT&T Pro-Am, and he shot 65 in the final round at Pebble Beach. But in addition to that, he went on a buddy trip to Pebble Beach and said that made the difference. He really began to understand the course. And when I mentioned that the Pro-Am, his form was like a bit dodgy, he'd missed those cuts, it's the other two courses he didn't like. He'd always quite liked Pebble Beach. So it was like his form was a little bit hidden there.
That's interesting, yeah. And going back to the course, in a way, the course was very similar to how Pebble Beach plays in February for that Pro-Am. So normally you'd say, oh, you can't read into course form, but I think you can a little bit given the fact that it was set up how it was.
And he also said there was a big subject ahead of the Poa Nui grass, and he said that he has begun to suss it. He had problems with it at one point. I think at Torrey Pines, he had one top 20 in his first six starts there. He's had four in a row since, and very similar sort of greens, similar sort of setup on the cliff tops. So all the stuff was sort of falling into place for him.
We mentioned before Brooks Koepka with those early birdies putting a little bit of pressure on Gary Woodland, who now makes it 11 American wins in the last 15 majors. Let's hear from Woodland then, who found himself under pressure from the defending champion early in his final round.
Brooks got off to a great start, and you knew he was going to come out. The conditions, the wind was down a little bit early in the round. You could play more aggressive. Obviously, those first couple holes, you can attack, and he did that. So it was nice for me to make that birdie on two to give myself confidence to kind of slow down everything, and then obviously executing the birdie on three as well. But Brooks he's unbelievable. He lives for this moment. And, you know, obviously what he's done the last couple of years is phenomenal. So it was nice. I told him when I got done, he needs to slow down a little bit. I saw it all day. He was knocking on the door. So I was proud of myself to stay in my moment and control myself and not get too worried about what he was doing. I don't think my game's where it needs to be, but it's getting there. I'm becoming a more complete player. I have more shots. I can rely more on my putting now. I can rely on my short game, things I couldn't do even last year. We've put a lot of work in this year and becoming a more complete player, and I can play different golf courses. I mean, people probably growing up said U.S. Open wouldn't suit me because I'm a long hitter, I'm a bomber. Coming to Pebble Beach, on top of that, it's a shorter golf course. And, I went out and proved, I think, to everybody else what I always believe, that I'm pretty good.
Yeah, nice words there from Gary Woodland. You know, everyone always says when the winner comes through and lifts the trophy, what a nice guy, what a lovely fella. But it was interesting, one of the things I heard from Pete Cowan was saying that maybe one thing lacking from him was that maybe he needed a selfish streak, a mean streak as well. That's, again, getting back to the mentality, Jamie.
Well, yeah, he talked a lot there about control, didn't he? Calm, about being calm and about being in control, because he's obviously a player who likes to take the golf course on. He said he's a bomber, hits it a long way off the tee. But he's brought different aspects of his game, and he's obviously got an inner self-belief there. He said, I knew how good a player I was. I just had to put it on the golf course. With the work he's been doing over the last 6 months or whatever with Pete, it's really paying dividends. He just reminds me of looking at Brooks Koepka. He just looks exactly the same to me. Maybe it's a template for future champions.
I like the fact that he talked quite a bit, not just then, but in his press conference afterwards, about he had to get into the state where he was enjoying being uncomfortable and be ready to not shy away from that, but embrace it. And that little change in mentality is one of the key things that's helped him in the last sort of four majors, that, and especially yesterday. I think those key little shifts of tone in the way that you're telling yourself how you shape the narrative of what's going on around you, those make a massive difference.
Let's talk about Koepka. He was one place short of winning three US Opens in a row, something that hadn't been done for over 100 years. His major record, Jamie, it's extraordinary, isn't it, over the last 2-3 years now?
It is, yeah. Absolutely incredible. And he doesn't look fazed by anything. He made birdie on the second yesterday. Did you see that? He was in the rough. He was in a horrible, horrible lie at the bottom of a bunker. Not in the bunker. And he somehow got this ball. It was just an incredible shot. He hit it to about 10 feet and rolled it in for a three. It was just like, even when he's at it in the trouble, he's making three. So his confidence is sky high. And maybe he just ran out a bit of steam. I don't know. There weren't many good scores on the back nine yesterday. So
no, it was tough. It was playing tough.
It was difficult. Yeah, it was difficult. So, and Woodland didn't come back to him. So he put as much pressure on him as possible. But the truth is, Woodland was just too far in front and just played a great game.
So he's won the last two USPGAs. He's gone second, first, second in the three majors so far this year, Matt. I mean, he was 50th in the Canadian Open the week before. It's just, you know, you hear golfers saying, you know, I've got to gear myself up for the majors, and I'm always thinking, yeah, okay. But he does.
I was chatting to Charlie Hull recently, and her fiancé is a martial artist. a sort of, what do you call it, the MMA, is it?
That's right, yeah. Ozzy's his name.
Ozzy, yeah. And so she's having a bit of a change in the way she prepares, because obviously he has to peak for every fight he has. He's got no alternative, because if he doesn't peak, he's going to get him battered. And he finds it very difficult to see the way that golfers prepare, because they do their best, but they almost sort of submit themselves to the ebb and flow of form. Whereas he's like saying, I'm not going to submit myself to that. I want to make sure that I peak. And most golfers don't do it. And Brooks Koepka appears to be the man that has sussed this. And the other person he reminds me of is, do you remember David Gow, the cricketer?
Mm-hmm.
In the 80s, brilliant test match player, but he was terrible for Leicestershire. It wasn't interested. Just playing a normal game of cricket just didn't interest him once he'd got to test match level. And there's a little element of Brooks Koepka there, I think.
Yeah, interesting. He's you know, we mentioned he came 50th in Canada. Apparently, he didn't touch a club between winning the PGA and the Tuesday of the Canadian Open, and then he just played 9 holes of the course before the first round. He was obviously thinking in Canada about Pebble Beach.
Well, that's, yeah, you can't keep going. You just can't keep, you know, that level of practice that you, and intensity that you need to perform in big tournaments. So he's smart enough to realise you need some downtime as well, and just get away with it and clear the head, because you can only cope with so much being put into you and what a major championship demands of you every week as well. So, yeah, he's got it, hasn't he? He's got the, whatever it is, he's got the formula. As you say, Rich, you're always a bit scared, because everyone wants to prepare. Everyone wants to win a major.
Of course.
They're all preparing for the major. They're thinking about them. But he seems like he's found the recipe that works really well for him. It might not work for other players, but it's certainly working for him. Tiger had it.
Yeah. In abundance. Let's hear from Koepka, shall we? So let's find out. Did coming second this time sting?
Done sting. I played great. Nothing I can do. I mean, I gave it my all. I give it my all every time. And, you know, sometimes, like this week, it happened at Augusta. It's just not it's not meant to be. Gary played a great 4 days. That's what you got to do if you want to win a U.S. Open, win a major championship. And hats off to him. Cool way to go out there on 18 to make that bomb. It's you know, he deserves it. He's worked hard, and you know, happy for him to come this close to going 3 in a row. It's incredible. Anytime you can compete in a major, special, and you know, to have the chance to go back to back to back, that was pretty cool. I didn't really think about it until I was done in 18 and realized how close I actually was to kind of, I guess, not making history, but kind of tying it, I guess you could say. But it's a cool feeling to know, and you know, it just wasn't meant to be this week.
Interesting. Interesting man, Brooks Koepka. I want to go back to the beginning of the week with him. World number one, 2-time in a row champion. And there was a commercial on TV in the United States for the event itself, and he wasn't on it. He said somebody should get fired. The Koepka chip on the shoulder continues, despite being at the moment, the best golfer in the world.
I think he should just keep running with those chips on his shoulder. It's a bit like sort of Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger used to drive their team by saying that the media didn't like them, and they were throwing sort of articles around saying, look, come on, let's show. He just needs to keep this going. And I think he's quite smart in that regard. Because like some people have told me that the advert wasn't quite the way he was portraying it either. So he was literally he's looking for stuff to drive him mad.
Yeah, apparently there was another promo with him featuring heavily, but he chose to ignore that one and just pick the one that didn't have him in so much. So yeah, he's using it, and it's not just him; it'd be his team as well. So this is what they think of you, trying to get him to prove a point all the time. I think you can't keep going with that, but
no.
At the moment it's working very nicely for him, and he's still, I'm still going to say the golfing public, they don't really know who he is, and they still, because the public don't really know who he is, they don't really rate him, because they don't, no one knows the real Brooks Koepka. I don't think we do either, really, because he's quite a quiet man.
Well, I found something out about Brooks Koepka this week that I just found startling.
He's a good golfer?
Apparently, he's never had a hot cup of tea or coffee.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. I mean, that's remarkable, isn't it?
I found this last night before I went to bed. Yeah, unbelievable.
I think you find the younger generation don't drink the teas and coffees that we do. It's different.
You heard of Starbucks, Jamie?
I've heard of Starbucks, but the younger generation, they don't drink tea and coffee like they just don't.
So majors in the last night. Imagine where he could be
if
he had a nice espresso.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. So yeah, that's Brooks, incredible, and his caddy Ricky Elliott from Portrush.
Hmm.
Next major, he's got to be the favourite, hasn't he?
Well, of course he will be. With his form, he's favourite. Forget that his caddy is from Paul Rush. His caddy doesn't hit the shots for him, and there'll be other people who know the course just as well. But
well, there'll be others that don't.
It seems to be written in the stars, but then again, it was Phil Mickelson's birthday on Sunday as well.
Yeah.
And that wasn't written in the stars, was it? So, I don't know. I ignore all that stuff, to be honest with you.
You nearly said rubbish.
I did say, yeah, I was all right. I'll say it, rubbish. Because, yeah, McDowell's going home. He knows it better than anyone. Darren Clark is going to be there. Rory played that course many, so I don't know about that. I don't know Paul Rush either as a golf course. What we will find out, I've got to think, is whether he can play in the wind and the rain. We will find, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to that.
And also, his best open finish was Birkdale, which wasn't testing him in the wind, especially in a links performance. So, yeah, he's got a test coming up.
And it was windy last round at the USPGA when he started to struggle. Was that the windy conditions or was that just...
That's the fact that Bethpage Black is just a beast.
Yeah.
And they were all struggling.
Okay, one man who finished in a share of third was Justin Rose, of course. Started the final round just a shot behind Woodland, but fell away in the end, finishing six shots back.
Like, today it doesn't hurt. It's just like you look at it and you've got to reflect and you've got to say, okay, how can I get better? There's no point letting it hurt too much. It hurts if you lose at the death and you make a mistake, you know, like the way it happened for me today. You know, it's like, yeah, I was more proud of the fact I even gave myself a chance. You know, I didn't have my A game this week, and to contend in a major with no game, really, I take the positive from that rather than, you know, sure, you know, I came out and responded early. I felt, you know, a couple of good swings into one, made birdie, felt really good, drove it great down the middle of two, so I felt good within myself in the situation. Just, you know, you need to be really on point. And I, you know, just gave a couple cheap bogeys away early in the back nine. Yeah, today, you know, there's some couple of still things to be learned from. I felt like around the turn there, I just, you know, I was fighting it a little bit. So, but then once the momentum had completely left me, I had to like rebuild and reset a little bit the last few holes. And I kind of started to really narrow my focus again, pick better targets. So that's just a kind of a lesson. You can't get sloppy out there at all. You know, it really shows up in these big events if that happens, on, you know, down the stretch.
Listen, for a while it looked like he might be the man this week. The way he putted, Jamie, I mean, I was watching a lot the first two rounds. I don't think he did miss anything.
No, it's you're just used to Justin hitting the fairways, hitting the greens and grinding the opposition into the dust. But he mentioned three times there, hurt. He'll be really hurting. Because you don't get that many opportunities, and he had a great opportunity there. But the other thing is, he didn't have his A game all week. I don't think it was that bad. It wasn't as if you know, he was hitting it off the planet or anything like that. He made a few misjudgments, especially on the back nine, where he made a few bogeys. He was four over for his last 11 holes. Well, that will hurt. But, yeah, he didn't have his A game. And typical Justin Rose, just taking the positives out. What can I learn next time I'm in this situation?
Matt, he said going into the final round, he's got everything gain, nothing to lose. Very different to how he was talking before the final round in Merriam, where he was bigging it up and saying, I'm on the precipice of an historic moment here.
He hasn't quite convinced me this year, which is strange, because he got such a great start with the win, with the new clubs, but it miscut the Masters, which was like a real shock, because he's got such a great record there. I think it's a good sign that he's back in the top five, but I'm not surprised that he seems a little bit like he's fighting it a little bit.
He hasn't got a great open record, has he?
Well, it's strange. He was second at Carnoustie last year, but that was the first time he's bettered his fourth at Royal Birkdale when he's an amateur. Which, I mean, after that, everyone would have thought, oh, he's going to be a standing dish every open as a competitor, but it's taken him a long time. It might help him that not many people in the field are going to have that much experience at Port Rush.
Well, and also last year at Carnoustie, he got 64 in the third round. He only just made the cut. I followed that group. I was lucky to be out on the golf course with him doing on-course comms. I think he held a 15-footer to make the cut.
On the mark.
Yeah. And then he shot 64 to put himself right in contention. So you're right, his open record. I don't know why that is, really. Because I see him as a player coping with any conditions, Justin. But his open record has been... Maybe this might be the one, especially going to a course that not many people know. Very few, in fact. So that might suit Justin.
I want to talk about Rory. I want to talk about Tiger. I want to talk about Spieth. I definitely want to talk about Victor Hovland. But before I do that, Jamie, give us a rundown of the top 10 as it finished at Pebble Beach.
Well, there was a few players tied ninth. Henrik Stenson, much better week for him in ninth, alongside Rory McIlroy. Didn't happen for him yesterday. And Chesson Hadley, he was also tied ninth. Tied seventh, Louis Oosthuizen and Adam Scott. The impressive Xander Schauffele was tied third alongside Justin Rose, Ches Reavy and John Rahm. Runner-up was Brooks Koepka and the champion, Gary Woodland.
Yeah, listen to those names there. Ches Reavy is probably the one that stands out as probably the biggest surprise to be in that top 10, Matt.
He was, although he was second in the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am last year, and only Ted Potter beat him. So he got a little bit, of course. And it was definitely a place, Pebble Beach, where form in that AT&T has transferred down the years. I think it's become a lesser case as people get more used to the track, but he was a surprise, but not a massive surprise based on that.
I think Rahm's a surprise for me. No one's even mentioned Rahm. He's starting to play well in the majors. He struggled when lots expected of John Rahm. But he's starting to show his worth now. I mean, he never really liked he was going to win this week, but much better performance from him in the major. He'd be going, He's somebody who has won in Ireland. He has won in the rain. He'll be looking forward to going to Portrush.
Yeah, I wouldn't be a surprise, would there, if John Rahm won a major now, would there, Matt?
Oh, no. I think the only problem he's ever going to have is can he keep his self-control for four rounds?
Yeah, we love that, though. We want a bit of that.
We want a bit of Jamie Spence coming out, don't we?
But it's not
don't
just
get that, in his way, by the way.
It's not just that he's won the Irish Open either, but he's won it at Port Stewart, which is literally, what, 3 or 4 miles from Portrush.
You've got to think he had a practice round. You've got to think he went and played Portrush as well.
There's a port in it as well.
Tenuous. I love that. I love that.
But the thing is, he might be staying in the same place. When he knew Portrush was up, he might be booked in the same place. Nice memories.
It might well do. I mean, just the one guy that, to me, was great to watch, and I hadn't watched that much of him play before this week. I know he was in the Masters as well, but we saw quite a lot of him this week because he was in one of the featured groups as well the first couple of days. Victor Hovland. What a performance from him just throughout this week, throughout the Masters. Are we looking at potentially a Ryder Cup player for next year, maybe?
Yeah, why not? Why not? Yeah, very impressive player. Victor, a friend of mine told me about a year ago to keep my eyes on Victor Hovland because his partner's Norwegian. It's obviously a vested interest there. And I've kept my eyes on him, and what a player. A good swing, big, strong, hits along. He's just turned pro now, hasn't he?
This week's
playing
the Travelers.
He won the US Amateur at Pebble as well, didn't he? So, but he's doesn't look out of place, does he, up there with all those guys. So he's got a great future ahead of him. Ryder Cups, you would think so. Great. Really, really impressive performance from a young man.
Kind of, because I mean, coming off the back of Rahm, kind of similar build to John Rahm.
And if no one's seen him, there's a great video that went viral on Twitter of the sheer speed of his swing, which is just extraordinary. It also made me laugh. There was at the Made in Denmark tournament, they had the walkthrough that the players went to get to one of the tees. There was a guy there that they interviewed, and he said, "Oh, I'm from Norway. I've come down to support Norwegian golfers." And he named the two golfers. I thought, man, it's a big journey to support two guys who are struggling to make the cut. But like his support of golfers is going to just go through the roof.
He's going to have to make a few trips to America, I think.
In the next few years, he's going to have something to cheer, definitely.
Because he went to Oklahoma State. Matt Wolf, another guy who's just turning pro as well. I mean, they must have had some team, mustn't they, there? Wow. I mean, again, and not the most orthodox swings either of those guys have got, but as you mentioned, the speed of it, the athleticism.
They've got their own way of playing, and I think it's very important that they stick to their own principles, because it's easy when you go out and tour and you start hitting balls week to week on the range, you get into that weekly grind, you can start, especially if you have a couple of weeks where you miss a couple of cuts, you think, right, what have I got to do different? Well, you haven't got to do anything different, just carry on doing what you're doing, but just do it a little bit better. So you can get caught up in that maelstrom of coaches and techniques and all the wizardry that goes on at a tour. You've got to keep to your own process. I don't like that word process, but he certainly has. He's just got to stick to what he knows for a bit.
Yeah, it's exciting.
I thought there was a little element of that. I think close your ears, Jamie, because I'm going to be back to mention strokes gain stats. But he was doing exceptionally well on strokes gain off the tee, and it was getting a bit of coverage on Twitter. And I thought there's an element there where he's clearly having the time of his life, loves hitting driver, he can be really aggressive. And it's interesting, how will that affect him next week when suddenly, instead of just everything to gain, nothing to lose, next week suddenly it's a slightly different mental sort of process. And will he remain completely true to his methods as an amateur?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But the future is obviously incredibly bright for Victor Hovland. It's certainly going to be, I think, the best ever Norwegian male. And maybe he might even surpass Suzanne Pettersen as the best ever Norwegian golfer. We shall see. Got to talk about Rory McIlroy. I mean, this time last week, just in awe again of his amazing talent when he, you know, could have broken 60 and obviously won the Canadian Open by miles. Mm. Again this week, not, I mean, still top 10, but not quite really contending.
He played well, Rory, all week, really. It's really hard to follow up a performance like that. That always worries me when someone's played such brilliant golf. You can't keep doing that, what he did in Canada. Plus, that course in Canada really suited him because he could hit a driver. He could probably only hit three or four drivers here, which is his strength of his game. He really, when he gets that driver going. And then yesterday, he said he didn't have to press on Saturday evening, but he did press. And he hit driver off second and made double, and that was it. Sayonara for Rory, unfortunately. But we do criticise him for making top tens. It's a bit unfair, really.
What, 11th top 10 of the year?
He's really testing that, you know, he's obsessed with the philosophy of the Stoics at the moment. He's kind of almost testing himself more and more with this sort of nearly business, isn't he? But I think he's the sort of person who really his team needs to. We were talking about the chip on the shoulder that Brooks Koepka's got. Something just needs to happen at the start of a major week that just puts a little bit of oomph behind Rory, just needles him to sort of take it to the next level. I think that could be the secret to him finally winning a major.
Again, you mean?
Yes, again. Because I tell you what's worrying, it's 5 years now since he last won a major. That's a big gap to undertake.
Saving it for Northern Ireland.
Let's hope so, because it'd be a brilliant story.
It would. It's his 20th top 10 in a major, his sixth straight season. He's placed tied 10th or better in at least two majors as well. There's not much wrong there, is there, really?
There's not, but the world of golf's a pretty quickly changing place. There was no Brooks Koepka 5 years ago. There was no Gary Woodland and other golfers up there. Francesco Molinari wasn't the same player, was he, 5 years ago?
And guys like Hovland that we're talking
That's
about
right.
coming
so
through.
So it's a different world. It's a competitive environment. So, yeah, Rory's an exceptional golfer on his week. But timing that week to coincide with a major is difficult.
Tiger Woods. Matt, I mean, what do we make of his week?
I was kind of expecting pretty much what we got. He's for a place that he has won a tournament at quite as comprehensively as he has in 2000. He has got more and more grouchy about the greens at Pebble Beach. So I kind of wasn't expecting that much from him this week. I think he has a much better chance at Royal Portrush, actually. I think the way his eyes started to glint at Carnoustie last year when he started talking about how much he likes playing links golf and he feels that he has a real good chance there, that's after the Masters, that's where I thought he's going to have his next big chance.
Some concern about his fitness. The weekend he had that kinetic tape on his neck. Says when it gets cold, everything gets achy. He might find it a bit chilly. We'll see what the weather's going to do.
I know how he feels.
But listen, Northern Ireland didn't.
Listen, it's a miracle what he's done to come back and be competitive, to win when he won the Tour Championship last year and then to win the Masters. It's a miracle what he's been through physically with his body. And there's a price to pay for that. And you're not going to see the same time. I think we all think, because we're so used to him being invincible in the past, I think we still feel that person's there. But it's not. It's a different player. And yeah, he can still win big tournaments, but it's going to be difficult for him because there's so many really good players. I mean, you've got to think Gary Woodland and Brooks Koepka are knocking it 30, 40 yards past him. When has he ever had that to cope with in his prime? No one hit it far past him, did they, really?
Not if he wanted it.
No. They do now, so it's a different game for him now. And 21st, his scores are pretty good. He never lit the place up, but I thought he did quite well.
Yeah, he had four bogeys in his first six holes. Still shot 69, sure. Finished tied 21st. Do we think he's going to play before the Open?
Have you got his number? You can give him a call.
I think one of his favourite things before the Open is to go and play a bit of golf, links golf, but away from the glare, isn't it?
I think that's his big thing. I'd be surprised. Personally, my opinion is I'd be surprised if he does play an event before Portrush.
Me too. I think Matt's absolutely right. He'll come over early and play some links golf and a bit of fishing and relax. And
I did hear, by the way, that when he at the start of May, he actually went over to Portrush.
I think that was fake news.
Oh, was it fake news?
I think so, yeah.
Right. I won't. I won't.
I don't know for sure, but I think it was. I think so. Strange US Open for Jordan Spieth, wasn't it? There were some real talking points with his. First of all, I don't know if, Jamie, did you see the chat with Michael Greller with a couple of the shots?
I did, saw that on the range. No, I saw them afterwards on the range, when they're having a bit of a conflict
He said he hit two perfect shots, but they went into trouble. Michael, two perfect... I won't do the accent.
No, the aftermath of that is when they zoomed in on the range, they were having a, you know, it was just the two of them getting stuck into each other, so...
But is that normal, is what I was going to ask.
Yeah, and he's looking for answers as well. He can't quite work it out because everything's gone so well for him over the first four years of his career. Over the last year and a half, it's not been like that, has it? So now he's starting to question his caddy as well.
These things are quite interesting. How we focus on these and make them a potential problem. We don't know how many times similar things like to that happened when he was in his successful period. And actually, it might not be any different to what happened at the time. It could well be important, and they might split up, but... We also don't know. They might have done that quite a lot when they're doing well.
Yeah, and then there was the next day, Rake Gate. Did you see that one?
I didn't see that
one. So he was in a bunker. I can't remember which hole it was.
Yeah, saw that.
Yeah, and the ball comes out of the bunker and there's a rake in the grass the other side of the face of the bunker.
To be fair, no one saw the rake, did they? No one until he hit it.
And he hit the rake.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that kind of week, really, for Jordan Spieth, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. He does... He's the sort of player who will go for it. And when you do that, it's you've really got to be spot on to get it right. And I think he's a gambler on the golf course. He will take shots on. And sometimes, you know what? They don't come off. And sometimes they don't come off also when you really, really want it. And you're going through a quiet spell as well. So he just needs to regroup. He's got a good caddy there as well. I hope he doesn't do anything silly with them and get rid of his caddy.
Dustin Johnson. One win in 41
majors.
What's
going on with Dustin Johnson? What is it? He's got a great record round there. I just
split
so
with his
disappointed.
Coach.
I know. Yeah, he's sending his tapes to Butch now. I can't get him. I just don't understand it. What is going on with him? He just seems to fritter shots away. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we overrate him. I certainly do.
Well, again, he's one of those with a huge amount of talent.
He's almost the flip side of Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka has found the secret of major championship golf, and Dustin Johnson is finding more and more bizarre ways of underperforming at the top level.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I really, he just disappoints to me. With someone who hits the ball so well, he's worked on his short game really hard over the last, three, 4 years with his pitching and his putting. Hits that fade now off the tee, but he just doesn't seem to... Well, Richard, help me out.
I don't know the answers. I'm saying I would say his
performance...
I've taken
off my glasses and thrown them on the floor as soon as you mentioned his name.
His performance is probably the most baffling of the week for me, really, because you'd have thought this place set up nicely for him. The
best record of anybody around here.
Yeah, and the game he's got, but never really featured at all. I think we'll leave it to the... We can't do silence, but if we could... To have some
We've
silence.
Done it. We've done it.
With that.
I'm going nowhere with that.
There was another one social media nice from, I don't know if you saw when Henrik Stenson hit the ball in the crowds. Have you seen that one, Matt?
I did see that, and he made a nice photo. I just hope he shouted four before it clonked the fella on the head.
They got a nice photo of him and his other wife or girlfriend laying down with Henrik in the shot, holding their heads. It all turned out nicely in the end. I wonder, has there been much change in the world's top 10? Post US Open?
There's always change after a major. Gary Woodland moves up to number 12 and Jon Rahm is number 11 before we go into the top 10. So it's pretty impressive, two players just hovering just outside it. Bryson DeChambeau is number 10. He's not figured for quite a few weeks, has he, DeChambeau? Xander Schauffele is number 9. Cantlay is at 8. Justin Thomas, another one who's gone a bit quiet. He's at 7. Francesco Molinari at 6. Tiger, he's number 5. Rory's number 4. Justin Rose is 3. Dustin Johnson, he's number 2. Mm. Dustin, he's 2 points, point and a half now behind Brooks Koepka, who's our number 1.
Yeah, number 1, Brooks Koepka. And what about the race to the bystands? You've got those handy as well, Jamie?
Just give me a second,
go on,
Richard.
Slip them out.
Yes. In number 10 is Hao Tong Li. Francesco Molinari is at 9. Poulter is at 8. Justin Harding having a great season at 7. Jorge Campillo, the cash register, he's at 6. Louis Oosthuizen at 5. Schauffele, he's at 4. Shane Lowry, number 3, playing some great golf this year, Lowry. Kisner is number 2. And our number 1 is Matt Wallace.
Yeah, great to see Matt Wallace to the top of the Race to Dubai standings. 12th in the US Open for Matt, who he said, because, you know, he has got the opportunity to go and play a lot of the PGA Tour events, but he said his focus this year, Jamie, is to win that Race to Dubai.
Good for him, yeah. I think that's a smart move on his... The temptation would be to maybe play a few more PGA Tour events. He's still surprising, isn't he? He's definitely got that chip on his shoulder that Brooks Koepka's got, because I think that's maybe the reason why he wasn't picked for the Ryder Cup, because when he played in the bigger events, he missed cuts, or he didn't play well in the French Open, the Rolex Series, he struggled, and he won outside of those events. But you can't say that anymore, because he's featuring on all those leaderboards now.
Third and 12th in his last two majors. Yeah.
And also, Willett, Wallace and Fitzpatrick, the sort of English solicitors that all went tied 12th.
Well, Danny Willett, off the back of his first top 10 on the PGA Tour since he won the Masters, another really good performance. So whatever he's working with Sean Foley about is working well.
Yeah, and low score of the day on moving day on Saturday from Willett to get into that position. Yeah, everything's sort of sharpening up nicely for him.
Yeah, well, let's see, because we had Robert Lee, Paul Eales and Matt Adams in our seats last week. Let's see how they got on. They had 2 picks each. 20 points to remind you for the winner, 10 for a top 5 finish, 5 for a top 20, and minus 5 if their player missed the cut. Now, Robert Lee went for Patrick Cantlay and Tiger Woods.
What a shame. Where did they finish, Rich? Tell us where they finished.
Well, they did it right. They both finished tied 21st.
Just outside the points. Bad luck, Rob.
So he gets 0 points for that. Paul Ilse went for Ian Poulter and Rory McIlroy. Now, obviously, he did have a top 10 there with Rory, but a miscut, unfortunately, from Ian Poulter, who went for that, what was it, pink-mauve combination on Friday?
That was a very good little bit of social media, wasn't there, with that, with Brooks Koepka was warming up, and he looked behind him, saw Poulter go past, went back to his work, and suddenly jerked his head up to have a second look at Poulter. Obviously didn't like that combo.
No, it wasn't the greatest, but a miscut, unfortunately, for him, so 0 points for him. And Matt Adams went for Dustin Johnson, who we know finished outside of the big places, tied 35th. And Brooks Koepka, smart betting net from Matt Adams, 10 points for his second place finish. So this means the overall scoreboard is presenters 165, co-presenters 90, our guests languishing on 25. Did you do better than our trio in the Fantasy Race to Dubai game? Well, David Wakerley had the most points last week in that game, but Lee Finley now leads the overall standings, and we'll do our picks, obviously, a little bit later for the, very shortly for the BMW International that's coming up. Just a bit of other news to give you first. Robin Roussel went the entire weekend without dropping a shot to secure his first European Challenge Tour victory on home soil at the Eau de France Pas-de-Calais Golf Open. And did you see this? Former world snooker champion Sean Murphy is attempting to qualify for this year's Open. Murphy's scratch handicap means he can play in a regional qualifier, man.
That's quite fun. But it sort of brings back memories of the great Maurice Flitcroft. Are you aware of his story? The Cumbrian lorry driver who decided that he wanted to qualify for the Open turned up but was absolutely hapless and hopeless. I think Murphy's going to give it a better crack than that. I did see some enterprising bookmaker offered odds of 147-1. For Murphy to win the Open.
If people don't know their snooker, that's obviously your maximum break, 147. You're a good snooker player, aren't you, Jimmy?
I used to play a bit of snooker, but I broke a few cues when I did that as well. It's a tough game, snooker. And I wouldn't try and enter the UK Snooker Championships because scratch handicap, he's got no chance.
No
chance. No, he hasn't. You've heard it all before. What annoys me, you know, is all the other sportsmen or cricketers or whatever it is, basketball players and baseball players, they all think they can come into our sport and they can shoot level par in their own course, they think they're quite good golfers. They've got no chance. It's an insult to professional golfers, I've got to be honest with you.
Okay.
It's like, I used to play decent football. It's like me thinking I can play football for a Vauxhall Conference team. You've got no chance because these guys have been doing it all their life. I
think
get
he's
it.
Treating it as a bit of fun.
I understand that. He's doing it for himself. But when he gets on the tee, it won't be so much fun. That's all I say. When he gets onto that first tee, first few holes, and he's five over after six.
Have you ever attended regional qualifying?
I wish him well, but I honestly, everyone thinks that they can play, that they're going to have a go at golf. You see footballers do it, haven't you? You see cricketers.
Sure.
It's rubbish. They've got no chance.
Well, who's the latest in America that's one of them?
Steph Curry.
Yeah, Steph Curry, yeah.
He's a great one of the greatest basketball player of the present era. And he's quite decent. He's not a bad player. But
no chance.
No.
I actually think going to regional qualifying is quite instructive in understanding just how brilliant the very top level of golf is. Because when I've been there, I've thought to myself, the difference between me and these guys, which is a collection of very good amateurs and club pros...
Is that you've got timing?
No, but the difference between me and them is almost less than the difference between them and the very, very top. Because it's just astonishing how much better the European Tour is than...
I think it's the golf course as well. They think 18 holes on one course is the same as 18 holes on another course, and it certainly is not. This Nordeichen ride we're going to go to next BMW International, they'll shoot 20 under around here. But you'll have rough that you won't be able to, people say, oh, the rough's up at our course. Go and see the rough here next week. You won't be able to move it. Yeah, so it's the difficulty of the courses, and of course the greens get quicker, that makes it much more difficult as well. You're right, the Open qualifier, it's not easy to get in the Open through that qualifier. Anyone's having a go at it, well played, good luck. There's not many spaces at the final qualifying. I did it my first time. I went through the regional final and I finished 21st at St Andrews. So I'll never forget that. And it's great that pathway is there for guys like Sean Murphy to dream. That's what it's there for.
OK, well, you mentioned the BMW International Open at the golf club Munchen Eichenried, which is in Munich. Jamie, you were runner-up at this course in 1998, so what's it like?
Kept all 14 clubs in the bag that week.
Obviously, it was a good week.
Yes, good week. It's flat. It's incredibly flat, but it's a really nice course to play. And it's good that we go back to the same venue. They took it to Cologne last year, Gutlachenhof. So they do move around a little bit, but genuinely we play at this golf course. I think you've got to hit that. They've lengthened it a little bit. They push the tees back as far as you can go. I think it suits guys who get the ball out there, especially on the par fives. The par fives are key here. You do play a bit of altitude as well. So when it gets quite warm, and the temperatures are supposed to be pretty warm this week, the ball flies quite considerably further. So I think guys that get the ball up in the air, it helps them. Smallish greens, get really good crowds there. It's a great week.
Yeah, I mean, 16, 17, 18, they're real challenge, aren't they?
16's they push the tee up on 16, short par four around the lake, and they put it to sort of distance that they almost have to have a go at it. So not all of them do, though. Some of them lay out with a 9-iron, believe it or not, but they make about 280 the front. But really good hole, and it comes at the right time.
Yeah, one of the players in the field who's got a really good record there is Sergio Garcia. Did you hear Sergio's comments last week after the first round of the US Open?
He said he was looking for... He was concentrating on the BMW.
Funny enough, he didn't say that, but he said after his first round, which I think he shot 68, something like that, I can't win. He said, I can't win.
He's at it again then.
Yeah, which is what he said.
And did he say why he couldn't win?
Yeah, he did. He said it was to do with the fact that he just had no control over his golf ball. He just felt...
Fair enough.
Yeah.
He's the one that knows.
Yeah.
He's always enjoyed this event, though. He likes getting the traditional outfits on, doesn't he? The, what do you call the leather,
Lederhosen.
The leather shorts? Lederhosen.
Lederhosen,
and then his wife enjoys getting the female equivalent.
I wonder where you're going with that, Matt.
just heading back to that the finish on this course, the other great thing is that 18th, you can score pretty much anything on it. Do you remember Rafa Echenique a few years ago? He held his second shot.
Albatross, yeah.
Yeah. And it's not entirely out of the question that it's not a gimme birdie, but I've seen the odd bogey down there, so it's big changes.
There's water off the tee on the left. You've got to cut the corner. It's about 280 to carry it, 275 sort of goes at an angle to carry the water. You've got to take the water on to make your second shot a lot shorter, and they've brought in the water on the right by the green as well. It is no gimme birdie, I can assure you. But remember when you watch TV, you watch the guys who are playing great. You don't watch the rest of the field who may be hitting the rough or the water. So it's a good hole. But two good shots, you're absolutely right. You've seen a lot of eagles there.
Matt Wallace is the defending champion. He's a little unlucky. Defended the Made in Denmark off the back of a major and a really good performance, and he suffered in Denmark. Yeah, didn't he miss the cut?
That is unlucky.
And now,
right.
And now
he's defending again.
Well, he's defending again this week off the back of another, like,
course change.
Mentally and physically tiring week. It's great to be defending.
Get used to it. As simple as that. There's lots of other players who played last week as well who are going to be here. So, different course. He won at Guttlakenhof last year. So, listen, Matt Wallace seems to be, I don't know, I don't think it really matters. Seems to be made of stern stuff, so I don't think it'd bother him.
Some of the other names in the field, the Westwood, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, we mentioned Matt Fitzpatrick and how well he did last week. Kurt Kitayama, Guido Migliozzi teeing it up for the first time since winning the Belgian knockout. Jos Lauten, Bernd Wiesberger, who's been in really good form, of course, didn't quite have the week he wanted last week in America. Tom Lewis, Tongchai Jaidi, after jumping in the pool in Portugal last week, and Torbjörn Olofsson, amongst the names that are going to be teeing up. Now, we get two picks each, OK? One pick has to be from outside the top 50 in last year's Race to Dubai standings. Just to remind you, we had it from last week. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, and minus 5 if your player misses the cut. So have you been studying any of this for
me? Well, you haven't mentioned Martin Kaymer. He's playing here. And Pablo Larrazabal has won twice on this golf course, so I'm not going to pick those. I thought I mentioned him. Kaymer's playing better. Kaymer's got a chance.
Yeah, I think, and he played decently last week as well.
I'll let Matt have first pick.
Okay, go on. Then,
we're going to go Jos Lauten. He's got good form on the course, and he's got 5 finishes of tied 12th or better this year, 8th at Hillside. His best on the course was 3rd. I think he's ready to burst out a little bit.
Okay, go on then, Jamie.
I've written down Dubuisson because I think he's playing better, but I just don't know what's coming with him, so I can't tip him.
He's been quite consistent though this year.
Has he?
Yeah.
You're going to tip him then, aren't you?
I had him on my list as a potential.
Have you got Erik van Rooyen on your list?
No, I haven't, no.
Okay, well, I'm going to pick... you want me to both tip? Both
it's
tips?
Up to you. You can go... Matt just went with one there.
Yeah, it's difficult. I've got to go with Sergio because we talked about it. In 2017, Sergio should have won and Andres Romero won, who the man sitting next to me fancied going into the last round. Sergio should have won that all day long. And that sticks in my mind. And so that's my number one tip is Sergio.
Okay, I am going to go with Lee Westwood. I'm not sure what his course form is around here, but I know that he would have been, I wouldn't say upset, but he would be watching the US
Smarting.
Open. Yeah, a little bit. I wouldn't quite maybe even go that far, but I think...
No, I think you're right.
I think he's had enough events now under his belt in the last few months because, you know, he's spent much of the first part of the year sitting on his backside or coach, practicing whatever he was doing. Now he's kind of in tournament mode properly. You know, another win for him at the end of last year. Why not?
Should we give you your second pick before we go back round us?
So I've got to pick someone who is outside the top.
You haven't got anybody yet.
50 of the Race to Dubai, have I? And
well, we'll let Matt go then.
Go on then, Matt.
Okay, I'm going to go Chris Paisley. He finished top 5 4 years ago on this course, and he's just found a little bit of form recently. He started working. Do you remember Jason Palmer, the one-handed chipper? Do you remember him a few years ago? He's now working on Chris Paisley's bag. Good friends. Jason Palmer's quite interesting. He went on Countdown. Did you ever see him when he was on Countdown?
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
Give us a cue.
Yeah. And
did he have a consonant? How many vowels did he have?
I don't know, but watching it was fantastic because, you know, if you're sort of watching a friend or somebody you know a little bit, and the first round he said, I've got an 8-letter word, and I was like, oh God, it's going to be some word he's just invented. But no, it was 8-letter words, and he thrashed the current champion. But yeah, those two, Paisley and Palmer, are going along nicely.
Who was your first pick?
My first pick was
Jos Lauten. They both finished outside the top 50 on the Race to Dubai last season, both those. That's fine.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. But just let you know.
Richard, do you want me to go?
Well, I've got my other guy outside the top 50. I will go with Dubuisson.
Dubuisson?
Yeah.
Okay.
Victor. Just love watching him play. And I said, I think he's found the consistency. I think he's found the focus. And I'm sure he's going to have a good week. Yeah.
Good for you. I'm between Van Rooyen and Migliozzi. And I'm going to go with Migliozzi because he really impressed me in Belgium. I think he's won twice this year.
Mm.
Hits it a long way. And he's got a lot of game.
Did you see how he was hitting those irons off a high tee?
Yeah.
And like knocking it down. What?
Well, he watched somebody apparently do the same thing, and it's to take the spin off the ball. And he saw someone do it on the range, he tried it, and it worked really well. So that's why he did it. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
But impressive play, you know, Migliozzi.
Yeah, you did mention the course. I mean, does it suit a type of player, Jamie, particularly?
I think the par fives are key. And I think if you can carry the corners, the 11th, you carry the corner there on down the right hand side, 18 down the left. I think it's quite a big advantage. But the front nine actually is quite a positional golf course, which is why I always felt I had a chance around there, because you could sort of plot your way round a little bit. But I suppose it's funny, I spoke to Wade Ormsby at the Sixes, and he says, I said, "Where are you playing next?" He said, "I'm not going to Munich." He says, "I can't play around there." So it does suit some and doesn't suit. Look at Pablo Larrazabal, who's a shot maker. He's always plays well around there, feels comfortable. But I think you want someone who just gets it out there for me.
Okay, so Matt's gone for Jos Lauten and Chris Paisley. Jamie's gone for Sergio Garcia and Guido Migliozzi. I've gone for Lee Westwood and Victor Dubuisson. Well, that's it. That's it for now. Next week, we'll have a full review, of course, of the BMW International Open in Munich. Plus, we'll look ahead to the Estrella Damm NA Andalusia Masters, hosted by the Sergio Garcia Foundation. Got that out, didn't I? Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest European Tour news via Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram via europeantour.com, or by downloading the official app. But from Matt Cooper,
goodbye.
From Jamie Spence,
goodbye, everybody.
And from me, Richard Kaufman, bye bye for now.